Yeah. Yeah, thank you very much for very, very nice words and these gifts and these I never had received even during my marriage, but so I very much would like to say thank you for everything. And it's almost impossible to really make any conclusions for this session, but just let me briefly summarize what I have done and which has been already mentioned, but my own emphasis I would like to a bit tell you, which might be useful to for the next generation of people, for example. And of course, this club is one of the favorite. And I, as Izumi-Hachisu mentioned, I have started the astrophysics in stellar evolutions because I like the word evolution. And I was very much interested in kind of history, Japanese history, world history, and in choosing physics, I also very much interested in something related to history, and evolution is a very nice word for me to choose this field. And I started evolutionary work from AGB stars and going upward. And my first work was the AGB stars and especially dredge up of the helium layer. I want to emphasize our approach at that time was very much limited by the power of the computer. And at that time, when I sent the job to the computer center, I have to wait for 1 week to get the result. And so we have plenty of time to talk with each other. And but the point was this first work was the calculated very, very super adiabatic and high entropy the envelope and how it affects the dredge up of the AGB helium rich layers and that makes the things. And our approach was to separate the envelope and core, not calculate together, because of the limitation. And also, we intentionally try to make some good approximation and to get the physics insight. And already, I noticed the dredge up is completely equivalent to the mass loss of the helium envelope. And so it's easy to go from this work to the core to the evolution of the white dwarf, but that will be the next story. And afterwards, we evolve this core to the central circle limit, and if we separate between envelope and core, it's rather easy to just go to the central circle limit without really calculating the whole phase of the helium shell fractures. And so that's one approach. And so my first work then, important work, was the supernova, the models for at that time we didn't know really type 1 supernova, just 3 to 8 mass, intermediate mass stars. And so we just ignite carbon at the center and to see what happened. And this is your first my papers and people's. And our first model was not really the current deflagration supernova, but this is actually a pulsating deflagration supernova. It takes more than 1 minute to get the explosions after this kind of pulsations. I forgot to mention. And around those days, the motivation was very much different. I don't know if that's the stage of the astrophysics at that time, or Japan was so isolated, or I don't know the reason, but the motivation we wrote in this paper is just in the stellar evolution models, if we believe the Barnett, the carbon detonation scenarios, that produce too much iron in the universe. And the neutron star, or the number of neutron stars in the galaxy is too small. And so we need to make a collapse, get collapse for this mass range. So that's the important motivation. And when I was calculating this phase and coming back, then I had good hope this might just to collapse. But actually it didn't. Anyway, I have no kind of connection to the actual observation in this phase, but our approximation, naturally, in this case, the core evolution is just exactly the same as the accreting white dwarf. The mass accretion is equivalent to the core growth through the nuclear shell burning. And so it's very natural to study the evolution of the white dwarfs with this code. And our approach, again, to simplify the process, the accretion of hydrogen, or helium, and carbon oxygen completely separated, parameterized. We didn't combine everything together. But in this case, the mass or the white dwarf and accretion rate is separated. So this is a parameter. Of course, if we calculating whole process together, this accretion rate kind of determined, but we just separately calculate and follow the nova and thermonuclear explosion. So this is kind of diagrams, and so we tried the nova models for a few years, and I moved to the supernova after a few years work, but then we moved to the evolution of the helium layers and just accretion of the function of the accretion, and found if the accretion rate is very slow, the helium is even detonated as the last discussed the other day. And in some cases, the core is really ignited at the center. And these processes are easily understood by computing the accretion process differently, almost completely independently. And as I said, around those days, we didn't know almost anything about type 1 supernova. Except for some X-ray astronomy group were a bit interested in supernova remnants, no supernova observers were there, and we have only 1.7-meter telescope. And from the literature, what I knew about type 1 supernova is just some silicon features observed. That's it. And then I got a postdoc position at NASA Goddard Space Flight Center from 1980, and 2 years. Then we decided to attend many meetings, as many as possible. So that's why I was everywhere in the US. So the most impressive meeting I first attended the La Jolla meeting, and then Austin, then Santa Cruz, and the Los Alamos, and then back to Kyoto, and then coming back to NASA. And I saw the light curve and spectra of type 1 supernova for the first time. And So this is the La Jolla meeting, proceeding with La Jolla meetings. And as you used in 1980, and I met most of the kind of key persons in this field in this meeting, and I really started to learn a lot about the supernova spectrum, and this is combined with super observers and modelers and atomic physicists. And I think it's Roger Chevalier that he told me that one of my models might be consistent with type 1 super. I didn't know that, but. And I immediately felt kind of reality in my work from that conversation. And then he started to tune the parameters and to kind of making a fit to the observation. And another important step was the OSTI meeting on type 1 super will be organized by Craig Wheeler. And this is very, very useful proceedings and in AD. And this, I think, the cover page was made by the tree. Yes. And yeah, this is earliest pictures and.
Who are those hippies?
I met Peter Sutherland, the in Aspen last month, after 20 years. And in Japan, there was a kind of tradition to kind of make this kind of tables to design the possible scenarios. In that proceeding, I tried to make kind of the evolutionary fate as a function of the mass accretion rate and the compositions, and this was possible by our approximations, by just doing every step separately, by step by step. And this leads to the kind of, in the journals, the more sophisticated form of the M dot and then diagrams and leading what kind of outcome is expected from accretion. And this is already shown by the Friedel and just at time of the Erice meeting, we kind of parameterized for the first time the deflagration models. And I exactly didn't know which parameters fit, but just changing the mixing length from 0.6, 0.7, 0.8, and just brought to the conference, and I fit the 0.7 case fit to the observations. Nice. So this was fun. My earlier work was introduced in the famous Kippenhahn's textbook, like this. That's quite nice. And another work that I did is already mentioned many times, but about the slightly above more massive stars, 8 to 10 solar mass stars, and that developed the degenerate oxygen and magnesium core. And again, this work was possible. I completely separate the outer layer from the cores and just concentrate on the cores. And the capture process, calculated by the Dr. Miyaji, he mentioned. But the important step for me is I was in NASA Goddard, and there was an IUU observation of the Crab Nebula, and that shows the carbon abundance. And at that time, the Rob Friedman was research associate at NASA, and we discussed about CRAB and get optical data from the Henley, and just discuss what kind of the stars can really reproduce the CRAB abundance. And our conclusion is the 89 solar mass star could produce the observed the patterns just by combining the IUU observation and optical observations. And the real hydrodynamics after the electron capture was done at Max Planck, the Wolfgang Hildebrandt, and I guess at that time already it was a bit controversial result. I didn't. Yes. This just shows why this mass range was really identified, because the we just evolve the neon star, not whole star, just a real neon star. That kind of approach was very, very useful. And we applied that process to the accretion-induced collapse, the evolution of the white dwarfs, because it is easy to move from the 8 to 10 solar mass to the evolution of the binaries with oxygen, magnesium, white dwarf. And this idea was already, I think, presented in 1979 at the Rochester meeting, I think celebrating the Greenstein's, the 60s. But but the except for the crab case, there is really no good observational constraint for this model. That's the not a good thing. And the supernova 7A changed life quite a lot. And in Japan, it was quite a big impact because of the neutrino detection at Kamiokande and the X-ray detections with Ginga satellite at the time. And the X-ray detection was really kind of marginal. And the people have been discussing, the X-ray people, if this is a real detection or not, or and if this is a good timing to report to the community. But at that time, I was just sharing the IAU colloquium 108 and to celebrate the Professor Fujita's 80. And as a chair, right after the 87A, I completely changed the topics of the conference, and nobody, no other association members complained, fortunately. So you see many Supernova people in attendance, which is very much different from the original ideas. And at this colloquium, the X-ray group reported the X-ray detections, and that really shocked the modelers. And I remember Peter Sutherland gave a nice prediction that we will detect X-rays the year after the explosions. And right after his talk, this X-ray detection was reported, and he was so much shocked and needed a lot of beers. So the situation had been very much changed at that time, because my impression, the theory group doing quite a good job in the evolution, but observation was not. But completely the opposite now. The neutrino is leading at top part, and X-ray people also just came to the top most advanced. It's completely the become the different. And especially the 87A was observed only southern hemisphere, not from Japan. But these tools are very much different, changed the observation situation in Japan. And after this supernova, I immediately realized I alone cannot do anything. So I decided my task would be just to organize the research. And so I just asked many people to work on progenitors and the ring formation, the collisions and nucleosynthesis, and developing the light cap code and the multi hydrodynamics and so on. And Izumi Hachi did a lot of daily terrain stabilities, and also dust people I introduced. And I gave a talk about those things at the Physical Society meeting. And surprisingly, the people who approached me about these results was the Laser Institute people, laser fusion people. They are very much interested in the instability in mixing. And another people is the meteorite people, who are also interested in mixing, to mix the element in different layers to make the meteorite. So this shows the party at my place, showing how our small house is small and very much limited in space, and we have seen several faces, and you easily recognize this is place. And after this supernova, my wife started to really write popular books, and including these cartoons, and decided to use my lectures, and that helps a lot, of course. And people remember only cartoons, not my talk. And in 1993, another supernova appeared, the 93J, and I learned a lot about the circumstellar interaction at this phase. And then 98 is another big difference. And very fortunately, the Paul Mazzari was in Japan, and he said he has data, and if let's do something. And then we had, a good work about this GRB, supernovae, and my important finding is just last year the General Assembly in Prague, and I was curious, what is this? Of course, from the taxi. Then at a certain point, they asked the taxi driver to stop and find out this is a hypermarket rather than a supermarket. This is important findings, and I like to make a kind of diagram like this. The main sequence mass kinetic energy, and of course the caution is this main sequence mass is coming from the core mass, so this depends on the metallicity and mass. And now the world of the hypernova is now, of course, very controversial, and I very much like this. So probably the observed features, we should say broad line supernovae, which covering this quite a wide range. And our hypernova is kind of modeler's world, and from models we derived the kinetic energy of explosion 1050 to ERG, and that covers this range. And so far in this category we have four supernovae identified, and GRB supernovae is really so far about three. So something interesting is going on in between, of course. But I'm not going to move in data, but probably we have to use the word kind of separately, observational way, depending on the model calculations to get the explosion energy. Another example of the usefulness of the kind of approximation over parameters is the work on the fast stars and the metal poor stars. And this is not the topic of this conference, but I wanted to show the usefulness of our approach. And I was very often criticized to using too much parameters to explain things, but in one meeting, I remember in one of the meetings in Brussels, I was noticed the zinc of iron is very much enhanced at low metallicity. And we decided to work on this to explain why this. And also the lot of data is not coming from the Subaru observations and so on. And so we decided to introduce lots of parameters, but to explain things. And that is so-called mixing and fallback. And The result is shown here. This is the abundance ratios of most metal poor stars, iron poor stars, hypermetal poor stars, and the abundance pattern is very much different from the solar abundance and very much high in carbon, oxygen, one. The mixing fallback means lots of material is fall back because of the low explosion energy in this case. But we assume some mixing of material and a tiny amount of iron peak element, for example, is mixed out into the envelope. And then the ejected material forming responsible to form the next generation of stars. So this is kind of mixing the typical approach with parameters, but to fit the observation. But this is probably a good analogy of the approximation of the jet exposure model, except for the exposure energy. In this case, high energy, because as one of my students Tominaga introduced in the posters, the jet kind of this kind of jet explosions associated with black hole. In the Kravtsov models, we have a lot of fallback from the equatorial direction in this way. And in this case, in this simulation, the parameter is the energy deposition rate. If the energy deposition is so slow, a lot of material fall back to form the very little iron ejected. So that really nicely explains the trend of the carbon iron ratio is so high at low metallicity and so on. If you are interested in details, you look at the poster. And this is very nicely explained the existence of the non supernova GRB, like this one. The very nearby GRB, but doesn't show any indication of the supernova brightness or the brightness. And so this is very nicely fit to the idea of the jet is coming, but lots of material just fall back and didn't eject it. Another interesting kind of success is the last week, I noticed that in AstroPH, the recon shown the abundance pattern of bare metal poor stars, but with a very peculiar abundance ratio, that the silicon ion is -1. The silicon is really small. And in this paper, she said there is no model that existed to be consistent with this abundance pattern. But actually, that jet model I showed just before, just naively without any adjustment, show the basic feature of this kind of silicon depletion in the ejector compared with iron with a kind of fallback process. So with those experience and some success, I want to kind of advertise the usefulness of kind of this kind of approach. And in our group is only one professor and a student, and it's kind of small luxury. So how to compete with big enterprise is a big problem, always. So we started from very approximate models, from one-zone models, and to get basic physics and with linear stability and so on. But that's not enough to really compare with observation. We need one more step to get structures and non-equilibrium natures and so on, which is very essential for the astrophysical bodies. And but 1D models require a lot of parameters for convection and so on. And it's different from 2D, 3D models. So this model requires lot higher resolution. So before moving to this high kind of first Buddhist approach, we intentionally use this kind of approximation. And the separating between core and envelope, usually very much criticized, but is kind of very useful approach in this case. And that kind of competing with big enterprise was also very much mentioned in X-ray, the people in Japan, compared with big X-ray satellites, Einstein and Chandra, but there was a 20 years gap. And in Japan, the people tried to not to make a break, but just small size satellites has been launched and is successful. And that's really very useful to to grow the group and get students and get funding and so on. So this kind of approach is, I think, useful if the group is not so big. Now just conclude. I want to come back really to the progenitor issue. And in this meeting still we don't have a good answer if the progenitor is a single or a double degenerate or a chandrasekhar mass or subchandra. And so we have to do all these kind of work, how if we use the chandrasekhar mass models, how the companion star provides mass to grow the wide open mass to the chandrasekhar limit or ignition point. And for that, we have to examine whole range of parameters, mass, metallicity, rotation, and so on. And so the lot of controversial things we discussed, and I very much focus on the one is the for the chandrasekhar models. Probably the key is the study of the circumstellar interaction to detect the circumstellar matter or through some observation. And because I do believe these two, or what I see, is type 1A explosions, and that in some cases producing a lot of hydrogen. And so in X-rays, very models with one, the type 1A explosion models very nicely reproduce the observation. We don't need the hyperbolic explosion. And circumstellar matter probably coming from the companion stars by the stripping effect by the shown by the Hachis and so on. So I want to keep this kind of line to really to detect something. And of course, we have to work on the evolution of the double degenerate, which, as the Philip mentioned, we need a lot of more work. And this just briefly showing the maximum temperature after merging, which one of my former students did calculate with SPH. And in his calculations, for almost all cases, the carbon is ignited right after the merging. And this ignition point is defined as the nuclear energy radiation rate exceeds the neutrino cooling. So for long-term evolution, this particle will be ignited. And of course, big question, but Bob and Alex, continue to asking what's the difference between, for example, elliptical and spiral. And my impression is the initial mass of the white dwarf at the ignition accretion is very much important, and probably rotation, angular momentum get from the companion star is very much different between these two cases because of the initial mass of the white dwarf up to the chandrasekhar limit. And one more step is, as I said, Japan has been so isolated, especially in observation. Now has been changed, especially in optical also after the Subaru telescope was built. And I did some collaboration with this Rob Fieden and Chris Geraldi and I am kind of useless person, but but we can make a proposal to read two observations, and that one direction for the theorist also. So I want to conclude our kind of approximate approach is regarded as a spiraling approach. We just started from hypothetical models and with a lot of parameters to fit, and we get observational constraints, and we get some partial truth. And in 1D model, for example, you cannot reach really the perfect models. And of course, we need first principle approach with the 2D, 3D, the computations, but these approaches are complementary, but with small groups, small workshops, I intended to take this kind of approach to back and forth, but going up, spiraling up, that's the important thing. And for this, we need good international collaboration, already mentioned earlier, and we are trying to get inviting people for different cultures, and we need a fund. Actually, I was one of the organizers 10 years ago, a super workshop here at Santa Barbara, and Bob and Jane had a very nice party at Thanksgiving, and so, of course, we have some competitions and so on, but we also have this kind of fun. That's a real nice thing. And we need some outreach. And to expand my experience, or that is kind of common to many people in Japan, in order to advance our science, I think people agree to make the Japanese society or Japanese research place quite open to the world. And we have, indeed, the internet and so on, it makes that connection very much easier, but still we have a lot of language problems and so on. So one of the idea was I took is to invite people for a month, few months, or a few weeks, and organizing a collaboration with students, and we have many excellent students. So if you can come, you have a chance to contact those students and to work together and to get nice results. And so that we are calling 21st century Center of Excellence program. So we try to make a Center of Excellence in that approach. And for the small scales, here you can see several people, and this is actually my actual birthday. Paolo named this Tokyo think tank, and to get some ideas and from the people discussing the topics and to go to something new. And so come to Japan, and we have some money. So enjoy Japan, and hope. My real hope that's the hope for those young students. Thank you very much.
I'm not sure what's happening after dinner tonight, but I've got the floor right now, and so I thought. Let's get both of these wonderful people up here and thank them for all the enriching they've done of all our lives. Let's do it together.
Thank you very much.
Chairman's prerogative. Where'd you go?
Yo-Yo would like to say something.
You know, since this is my first English speech, so maybe I will use not appropriate the words, but it's because I'm a Japanese and not Native American. And first of all, I think I'm always impressed by you, scientist. You know, I think you are weaving a tapestry of science. You know, astronomy and astrophysics is only the part of the science, but since astronomy is the field of origin of the everything, so you are doing the best part of the science, I guess. I don't know if it's true or not. And you are putting the thread every day by your work, but easily it's unthread. You know, you are putting and then out of new observation, put new thread maybe, but later on it unthread. New theory, put one, but unthread. But those threads maybe stimulate arguments, so the science itself is progressing, I guess. And now I think a dark energy is the most the thread becoming thicker and thicker. And but I don't know it will survive 10 years later or not. I hope it is, but I don't know. But I think the dark energy thing is stimulating a new the argument. So it's also the help stimulate to progress the science. And I think, you know, I'm always envy you, the scientists, are so enthusiastic doing this. And maybe the reason that scientists are doing research, maybe not only for your scientific interest. As someone said, maybe the strongest force in the universe is jealous. And I think you know who said that, or I don't know. But anyway, you are doing a wonderful job, I guess. And you are so enthusiastic talking about science all the time. And even though you are talking some other thing, suddenly it's back to science. And but I think you are very happy people who are so enthusiastic in one thing. But, you know, it's a problem too. You know, sometimes after the conference you promised to go some restaurant, but never decide where to go. And you just talk and someone says, let's go this restaurant. But suddenly someone says about science that you go to the science and don't decide. And you are talking on and never find the place. And in 1984, Professor Tanaka said to me, scientists cannot decide. So someone should decide for them. So at that time, I was still very young, and still Ken is a junior, and so I couldn't say, let's go to this restaurant, and still I cannot. But I think you are really undecidable people. And once I talked with Carol Truran, I don't know if she remembers or not, we are waiting at some conference, and then our neighbors always envy us because we are traveling a lot to go Europe, America, many places that ordinary people cannot go. But we agreed one thing. What we are doing is not a vacation to the abroad. The lots of thing is just waiting, waiting and waiting. And I think I'm has the record of waiting. Because I think I'm the only one spouse almost traveling all the time with my husband. Usually the wives are waiting at home, but still they are waiting you come back to the home. So my conclusion is, before that, the reason I became a science writer, maybe I was so bored just waiting. So I decided to interview people and get something from you, but still I was waiting. And my conclusion is that your family is waiting somewhere, here or at home, but be careful, sometime when you're back, nobody is waiting you. Thank you very much.
All right, well, we'll see whether our after-dinner speaker can top that one. So let's all go to dinner.
Congratulations. It has been a pleasure this whole time. Wonderful.
Calculations don't look that different, right?